values, vision, voice, and virtue. And I work at Seattle University. I'm interested in the whole concept of leadership development. And let me just turn to the board here and give you an indication as to why I've developed that interest. If we take a look, and this isn't going to be a very long lecture on the history of leadership theory, so don't leave yet. In 1900 and 1910 to about 1920, theories on leadership had to do with the Great Society. And after that, we began looking at the notion of leadership. One of the things that those two had in common was that they were promoting leadership for the notion of great societies and for the common good. As we get into about 1930 and some more popular movements around 1950, 1960, 70, and into the 80s, a very important distinction happens. Rather than philosophers being responsible for the development of the theories, we begin to see corporate leadership take responsibility for the development of the theories. And although well-intended, we have a new bottom line, and it's different than great societies, and I think we can all imagine what it is. That's an important distinction to take a look at as we consider what has happened to leadership theory, especially over the last 50 years. Some of the things I hope we're going to discover together this morning have to do with getting back to the notion of leadership for the great society, leadership for the common good. And we're going to do that by having each of us discover that part of us that needs some rebirth for those purposes. There's a lot of work being done in the area of leadership theory these days. And again, a lot of it's being done by corporate America. Colleges and universities across the country are doing some as well. And one of the things we find is that there's three kind of elements of the leadership theory that are being promoted on different campuses and in different corporate sectors. The elements are vision. A lot of the excellence literature that you may or may not be familiar with talks about vision. Another element of the current theories is communication. You know, if we have a vision, what we need to do as a leader is to communicate that to others. That makes sense. And then the final piece is persuasion. To have a vision and to be able to communicate it is one thing. To be able to persuade others to get on your bandwagon, so to speak, is considered the final element of leadership. Well, there's something very important missing, and it's central to the leadership theory that I'm trying to develop. Because if you look at the notion of vision, communication, and persuasion, Adolf Hitler was certainly very good at all three of those.
He had a vision
for how the world might be. He was certainly able to communicate that. And if you've seen any of his speeches, and I'm sure some of you had, he was very adept at persuasion. So we need to look at what's missing in these theories that are being talked about today. And I think the answer is value. And we're going to be spending a lot of time on that this morning. Let me tell you one story, and then we're going to get into some work, first individually and then in small groups. I like simple research, and there was a research study that was done about a dozen years ago by a guy named Arthur Levine. He later wrote a book on it called When Dreams and Heroes Died. And he asked college students two questions. That's simple research. I love it. The first question was, do you have hope for the future? And about 85% of the college students surveyed, this was about 75, about 85% of the college students surveyed said no, they did not have hope for the future. When asked why, the college students said, well, you know, nuclear proliferation, environmental deterioration, there's 112 wars going on in the planet. At that point in time, they did not have hope for the future. Okay? Second question. Do you have hope for yourself? 85% of the students surveyed answered yes. Surprised by that, he asked why. Well, you know, I did pretty well in high school. and I've made it into a good college. I'm working on a solid grade point average, and I'm a business major. I'm going to do pretty well. Or I have a solid grade point average, and I'm going to go off to medical school or law school, get into a good law school, get into a good law firm, and I'm going to be just fine. The individual doing well in the midst of a community that's going down the tubes. So he likened that to intentionally going first class on the Titanic. You know, the ship is headed for disaster, but I'm going to get a good deck chair. You know, where's the sun? I'm going to get a good tan. And let's not concern ourselves with where the ship is going. I'm going to get it while the getting is good. What I'd like to do is to bring us back to the notion of the Great Society, to bring us back to the notion of the common good, and to challenge all of us to find out where the captain's quarters are and ask if we might participate in engineering a change in heading. You know, we know the iceberg is out there, and if we don't engineer a change in heading, we're going to be part of the problem. We're going to be included in the disaster. So are we content to sit on our deck chairs, or will we find the initiative, I think the values, that causes us to get up out of our deck chairs and up to where the captain's quarters are so we can let folks know that a change in heading is in our best interest? That's what we're going to be spending some time on this morning. How is it that we find the purpose, the incentive, and the courage to engineer a change in heading? And I think all of those are found, again, in our values. What I'd like to do to give this morning some context, we're going to be taking a look at our values, but not in isolation, in the context of some real social ills. So what I'd like to do is list on the board, with your help, what you think are five serious social ills that require some leadership, that require some change in heading. Let's list those, and we're going to be doing some things with them later this morning. So you help me. Let's brainstorm five significant problems that we think need the attention of leaders.
Situation with the homeless.
Okay, homelessness. Great. Homophobia. What was that?
Homophobia.
Homophobia, great. Okay.
Environment.
Violence, you said?
Environment.
Environment, okay.
Prisons.
Prison?
Yeah.
Okay, prison reform. Okay.
Human obsolescence.
Human obsolescence, wow. Let's stop there. I'm getting depressed. Okay. Consider each of those six and begin listening to your own heart and head as to which one of those you'd like to spend some time in a small group later this morning talking about. But for now, if you have a pencil or paper, that would be pencil and paper, that would be great. If not, you can do some of this in your head. What I'd like to do is to list some values for you. Feel free to borrow paper from your neighbor if they have some. Promise to recycle the unused portion of this and I'll pass them around. I don't have extra pens, but okay, you can do this in your head, really. I think it'll work. Paper and pencil will assist, but I think you can do this in your head. What I'm going to list, about 20 values And what I'd like you to do is to write them down or make a mental note of those that seem to have the most meaning for you. If you have a pencil and paper, write all of them down. Otherwise, make a mental note of those which seem most important to you. And if me, as I read off these values, if another value comes to mind for you, make a note of that. So what you have in front of you or in your head is a list of values that are important to you. Okay? I'm just going to start reading some. Write them down if they seem important to you, and or if they remind you of others, make a note of those. What I'd like you to do, especially if you have paper or in your head, is to reduce your list in half. Of all of the values that you made a mental note of or that you wrote down on a piece of paper, reduce your list in half. Go ahead, I'll give you a couple minutes for that.
Choosing in what way?
Whatever seemed to have the most meaning to you.
You know, if there were some that were not listed in the report, should we include those in the list?
Yes.
The list you gave us?
Good question. If you chose some that weren't on the list that I gave you, you should include them on your own list. Right. Thanks, Dan. Who needs more time to reduce their list? Okay, great. Could we get several courageous volunteers to share your, what I would call your two core values? These might be, I underline might because they might change on a weekly or monthly, yearly basis. But these values seem to speak to you today in a significant way. And I would say that for today, they're your core values. They're your values that mean more to you than others. Therefore, my challenge to you will be throughout the rest of the morning is, how will you use those? They can be your best allies in terms of making decisions, standing up for what you believe in, because I believe that values are the kind of storehouse of energy for us in relation to contemporary dilemmas that we need to face. So who would like to share with the group some of your core values?
Love and truth.
The
basis for reducing it is found, surprisingly, was frequently I found one value could be eliminated because it was included in another.
Okay, great. So those two for you kind of subsume the others. Yeah.
Friendship and integrity.
Friendship and integrity. Care to talk about either of those?
Well, I think integrity is important because you know who you are and you're true to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And friendship is, you know, you're in the context of relationship.
Great. Terrific. Yes?
Love and family for me. And I'm just telling over here, I felt the family was inclusive of friendship and a lot of other ideas.
Okay. It was love and family, you said?
Love and family.
Okay. Let's get one other. How about right here?
I combine love and integrity.
Okay. Care to speak about those? Okay, great. Whatever your core values were, one of the things I'd like you to do throughout this week is to talk more about them with other people. Find an opportunity to tell others about your values. Speak about your values openly, especially to people who you know and love. That's one of the best ways in which we can share ourselves. And we typically, many of the people I know, don't find the occasion to do that, I think, as often as we should. What I'd like to do is to just share with you a model that I'm developing for leadership. It's an emerging model, and by that I mean I'm not sure that it's what I want it to be yet. So I would appreciate any feedback that you have about the model. And this is how it goes. I believe that leadership is about these four V's. I think leadership starts with our values. If we know what's important to us, if we know what matters, if we know when push comes to shove what our core values are, going through experiences like this and learning to express them to others, we have a solid foundation for leadership. Then I think what we need to do is about what we're going to do in just a moment in small groups. We need to encounter the world with our values. We need to go out and find the homeless, the hungry, the disenfranchised, the people who are in pain, the people who are marginalized by society, wherever they might be. And I would include in that the environment, not just people, but what on earth needs to be more like it would be in heaven. And as we search out the world through service, through friendship, through our vocations, and do that in the context of our values, we need to ask an important question. Let's say that we're looking at a social ill, let's say homelessness. We need to say, in light of my core values, how ought that be different? How do my values, we need to ask an ought question here, how do my values tell me, inform me, how things ought to be different? You can do that with yourself. You can do that with people that are in your family, in your community, your church community. As you answer that ought question, what you begin to develop is a vision for how things ought to be. If your values are in keeping with the gospel, then so will be your vision. Once you begin to discover a vision, you have some responsibility, because visions are given to those who are entrusted to do something with them. And so what we need to do next is to find an opportunity to claim our voice, to tell others about our values, to tell others about how we think things ought to be. While, this is the tough part, while being open to how they think things ought to be. And then we begin to have a discussion and hear a variety of voices. And I think that's a lot of what community is about. But you need to come to it with your own values and your own vision. Now, sometimes at that point, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on your perspective, there's conflict. But I really believe that this type of conflict, if we stick with it, if we try to resolve it, provides healthier answers, healthier voices for all of us. The final V is virtue, because again, in this model, Hitler had some values, he had a vision, and he had a voice. So we need a final V to kind of define the rest of them, and I would call it virtue. And I'm defining virtue in this case. I was looking for another word that started with V, so it was kind of limited. I'm going to define virtue as intended for the common good. And so therefore, are our values virtuous? The virtue question really becomes a litmus test for the other components. Are our values virtuous? Is our vision virtuous? And are our voices virtuous? As we struggle with those questions, both internally and in conversation with others, we begin to develop a vision that has potential for changing the situation and creating a situation which some of the pain, some of the struggle is relieved. And I would underline some, because as Henry Nouwen talks about, we need to distinguish sometimes between caring and curing. I think leaders in the 21st century or the 20th century are so bent on curing things that I think that's one of the ways in which leaders burn out. I really believe that in my heart of hearts that somehow caring is enough. And curing may be in the hands of God. I'm called to care. I'm not necessarily called to cure. Let me stop there and see if there's any questions. And then what I'd like to do is to get in small groups by these topic headings and get together with people of similar interest and begin to talk about your values, your core values in relation to these. But again, let me stop and see what questions we might have.
I'm bothered by your statement that caring is enough.
Okay.
I agree with you that we can't cure things, but I'm a great believer in partial answers.
Great. So am I. I agree with you. Responses to that question?
Well, the answers might be your answers, though, but they're not necessarily other people's answers. It's probably part of your trying to impose your answers on someone else's appeal.
One of the hardest things I've discovered about values and working with people in relation to values awareness and values development, it becomes very, very sensitive ground. And one of the hardest things I've observed in groups is for people to be able to talk about their values while being open to the values of others. And somehow we need to do that. And that's why I like your notion of partial answers. I have part of the truth, and so do you, and so do the rest of us. And somehow, together as a community, we're better off. Okay. I erased one of them, human obsolescence. Let's get that back on the list. What
May
I'd like
I ask
to do.
What that person meant? I think it might be what I'm interested in, but I don't okay. know what it
means. Well, I had my back turned to the group.
What society is doing to people who are obsolete insofar as it applies to making their way in our society.
Can you give an example of that?
I've been involved one way or another with construction most of my life, and I watch them now when they build a high-rise building and they locate a truck at the bottom of the building and cement truck backs up and dumps cement into a hopper and pumps the cement up many, many floors. I recall a picture probably taken back not much after the first of the century building, a high-rise building in New York City, and it was the legend that it was a bunch of Irishmen wheeling cement up to the high-rise building on what appeared to be 2x12 planks set at a fairly steep angle. Those fellows in wheelbarrows are obsolete.
Okay.
And they have not been able to acquire or learn how to use the pump.
All right.
You can take that on the computers to all kinds of things.
Great. Thank you. What I'd like to do, I think this will work out well, is if the person who mentioned the particular topic would raise their hand as I call that topic off, then those of you interested in discussing that with her or him can just assemble around that person, and it'll mean shuffling some seats. If you're listening to the tape, we're going to be having some small group discussions right now. Homeless, okay? Your name is?
Colleen.
Colleen, gather around Colleen if you want homelessness. Homophobia?
Jerry.
Jerry, okay. Medical care?
David.
David. All right. Environment?
Jam.
Prison reform?
Gloria.
Gloria, okay. And human obsolescence, your name is?
Bob.
Okay, gather around those people, and once you get in your small groups, after the shuffling of chairs has stopped, I'll give you the instructions for small groups again. Let me give you the instructions once more. What I'd like to suggest is the first thing you would do in your group, obviously, would be to introduce each other. If you would also have each group pick a spokesperson, there's lots of creative ways to do that. You know, everybody at the same time point to the person you'd like. That's called drafting. After you have introduced each other and picked the spokesperson, what I'd like you to do is to go around the circle and have each person report to the group their core values. So that the group has a sense of what sort of energy and chemistry is in the group. And then discuss the problem, whether homelessness or homophobia, etc., in light of the group's core values. And how do your values encourage you, inspire you to address these issues in maybe some new ways? Don't be surprised if you begin to think of some things that sound radical and off the wall, because that's what our core values do. So go for it. Give you about, and this is over at, what, 11:45?
11:45.
Okay, give you about 10 minutes. And I'll just be circulating and listening in if that's okay. It's always difficult to interrupt such wonderful discussions, but I'd like to call us back, and if you could bring your chairs forward again. I'm going to ask you to do something that I think is difficult, because these issues, these five issues, need so much attention. And listening into conversations in some of the groups, people said, you know, It's too bad this issue didn't get listed, or this issue, because they need attention too. And what I'm going to ask you to do is to almost take a step back from these issues that are very important in your mind's eye, and take a look at the ways in which talking about our values aid us in solving those dilemmas. Because what I'd like to focus on the next 15 minutes is the degree to which our values can assist us in being creative problem solvers, leaders in these different areas. What we're going to do is hear from small groups. Once we've heard from all the small groups, we're going to have a large group discussion, and then I'd like to end with just one more small glimpse about a way of picturing leadership that I think is very helpful. If we can just start with the group that spoke about homelessness, I think that was Colleen's group. Who is your spokesperson? And if you could come to the front, that would be great, just so we make sure we get you on tape. But if you'd like to talk loud from where you are, that's fine.
Well, we didn't really pick a spokesperson, but since it was my topic, okay. I guess I'll step great. Forward. Basically, what we talked about is we sort of identified where we all came from as far as what we felt about homeless and what we understood it in New York and had to deal with the homeless on a regular basis and in quite a large number. I'm from Orange County, so you have to drive 20 miles to even see a homeless person, which is unfortunate. That has to be brought to our attention by the media, huh? Yeah, see, you do have to go quite a ways, don't you? No, well, from El Toro, you do. You almost have to go into at least Santa Ana. And not that we're not aware of it, but when you see one, they really do stand out. It's not like New York City where they're part of the natural lifestyle. And then one of our people in our group was from a small town where there, again, the homeless isn't such a big issue. One of the gentlemen in our group was from Chicago, and he actually works in a homeless center one night a month and probably has the most information as far as having to deal with it. That, and Dan also. Like I say, I've been mostly impacted by the media, and that's where I get my information. We are currently dealing with the Habitat for the Homeless.
Great.
And President Carter was at our church last week, as a matter of fact, for a groundbreaking for some homes in Tijuana. And basically, that's where we're at right now in our group.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And the homophobia group spokesperson, and again, talk not only about the issue, but how it was that your group's core values affected the issue.
I don't know. I think we had four people, and I'll just speak for myself to begin with. For me, the integrity was very important in dealing with homophobia, because as a gay person, to be in a homophobic society, you're always having to, you know, reassert your integrity as who you are in a culture that doesn't affirm that. And then the friendship part of it was getting the support that you needed to maintain your integrity. And then we talked about love, and it was mentioned that if love was such an important thing, that there wouldn't be any room for homophobia in the culture, and peace. And it was talked about that homophobia and racism and sexism leads to violence in so many ways, just, you know, overt violence and more subtle psychological violence. And that is also like with an individual too, because you know, to have inner peace and to accept yourself and to feel loved and all that kind of stuff. So, and was there anything else? What was your other one?
Oh, justice.
Well, that's sort of an obvious one, you know. I don't know. So, and then we just talked about the issue ourselves, and that was pretty cool.
Terrific. Thanks a lot. Good discussions in all the groups. Medical care. David?
Well, I'll try to pull this together. We had 10 people, and from perhaps 20 different perspectives. Medical care is such a field that is approached from the financial injustices to a sense of the burden of the future, reshaping people's immediate lives and burdening them that way. It seemed like the kinds of values, core values, that played into this were issues of justice and dignity, integrity, including the internal integrity of doing something that's consistent with your values in this, and not knowing how to even approach it at times, compassion. And that resulted in issues of focusing on both the inequalities, the use of research funds versus immediate medical needs. And one thing that came out a couple different ways was empowering people in the medical system versus creating dependency where the sick become sicker, if not physically, at least relationally, in a sense of being belittled. So, you know, we could go on for hours. But, okay?
Thanks, David. Mm-hmm. Prison reform. Gloria?
Mm-hmm. Well, our group, we were a group of three women, and dealt with prisons. All of us, one of our core values was love, justice, integrity. What was your other one? Honesty. And we told stories about prisons, the overpopulation of jails, prisons becoming, statistics-wise, becoming into the millions of people going in there, and what are we going to do with them? And one of the core values was love, and how we love these people. Love them when we see them putting prisons a long way away from the society versus a place where families are very important. And when you move them out of the central city into a place where the families can't even go visit them, it's very difficult for the families to maintain that bond with those people. So a lot of issues with prison and the prison population in general as to how as a society we can incorporate them within our churches or within our own core groups. Anything else?
Terrific. Thanks. Human obsolescence.
We started out with a definition that was given of individuals perhaps not having current workplace skills, and expanded that first to think about people who don't fit in to our current work environment, perhaps because of their desired approach to work. They would like to work on building a whole house instead of being in a slot doing the same thing all the time, or perhaps because they'd like to build to a level of quality that the market doesn't sustain. Your employer then would not profit. And further then, we expanded it to concern about dignity in work and a sense of self-worth, and recognizing that with the specialization that's evolved in our workplace, there's come a pecking order, and there are lower-level jobs that we don't value. So even though someone may be able to make a living at these jobs, there is not fulfillment in being in these jobs. And we kind of shifted some of our core values. We'd all picked love, but then we'd picked other things that were harder to apply. So we identified love and dignity as the ones we focused on. And they suggested to us two things. First, love in particular suggested empowerment, that we would help people overcome the obsolescence, either through educational opportunities and training programs or other means. And dignity, kind of a reminder to ourselves that work, all types of work is important, kind of the Holden philosophy that it all needs to happen and somebody needs to do it. And someone had seen a t-shirt that a guest is wearing, and I did see it yesterday, so I don't know if the man is wearing it today, but it says something like, your work may not appear significant, but it's very important that you do it. It contributes to the whole.
Thank you. And thanks to Dan, I remembered the environment. Environment group.
Well, there were five of us, and we shared integrity as a real common core value, but there was also compassion and passion and family and joy and peace and love, all those environmental, right. But I think that, you know, we really keyed in on integrity and passion and talked about people and institutions not taking responsibility for themselves, and I think that's where integrity comes into play. That everybody thinks someone else will do it. And one person mentioned that in their family they work on conservation. And another person talked about that it's okay to talk about the environment now. It's in the media. Earth Day just happened. But a lot of people are still lethargic about the environment, and that's a reason why people don't care. We also brought up the issue of, in our society, there seems not to be enough time to care, and that time is money. So we don't leave enough room in our society to care for the environment because there's not enough time. We're all into this efficiency, you know, let's pop it into the microwave and throw the packaging out and not think about it. Talked about being so efficient that we're inefficient. And that one of the things that I like to think of is to try to get back to a simpler life, but it's really hard in the society that we live in because it's so complex and we don't allow ourselves to be simple. And someone talked about not going back to the good old days, but it's not really the good old days. It's just a simpler mode of living, but that's so hard to do in this day and age. Anything else we should mention?
Thank you very much. Why don't you give yourselves a round of applause? Good work. What I'd like to do, I guess, just for the remaining few minutes, recap a little bit and tell a quick story. You know, what we talked about earlier is that somehow we've moved from leadership as understood by the great society for the common good to an understanding of leadership, what it means to be an active and productive citizen that's based on a corporate model that has a bottom line that's different than I think we in the church ought to be satisfied with. I'd like you to, for a minute, picture a boardroom, not the church that you belong to, because that might have a different slant, but a boardroom that you might be a part of at work or in some community involvement that you have. Picture, if you can't picture that, picture a boardroom with Donald Trump in it, or with a chief executive officer who comes to mind for you. And picture what it would be like as they were in the midst of talking about an issue, and you introduced the concept of love, or justice, or peace, or happiness, or friendship. We have a schism in our country. Our core values, for those of us who are in touch with them, and I think many of you in this room obviously are, they affect our lives, maybe in our families, hopefully, maybe in our churches, but my hunch is that oftentimes they're left on the door just outside the boardroom. And one of the interests I have is to bring love into the boardroom. What would our culture be like if we talked about, what's going to make people happy? What is happiness? A survey done about 10 years ago, and I'm sorry, I can't quote the source, surveyed the American public and asked them a simple question. Again, I like simple surveys. Are you happy? Guess what percentage of the American public surveyed in that particular research piece indicated that they were happy. It's about 10 years ago. Anybody want to hazard a guess?
15%.
5%. One of the things I really believe is that one of the reasons why many people are not happy is because somehow they've separated themselves from their core values. They're living working in ways that either they are kept from their core values or they choose to be separated from their core values. And I believe that happiness and fulfillment, happiness in the biblical sense, is connected to us knowing what our values are and living out of them, because it causes us to do things that make us happy. So leadership for the common good, how do we get back to that? And just a couple quick stories and then any last discussion. For the last 5 or 6 years, I've asked high school students and college students as often as I can, who are your sheroes and who are your heroes? And there's been a frightening common denominator that's kind of emerged. Over the last 5 years, the most common denominator for the sheroes and heroes of high school and college students is that they're either dead or fictitious. That tells me something about what needs transforming in our culture. And I challenge high school students and college students not to look for heroes any longer, because I don't see a lot of heroes and sheroes in the scene, but to make a choice to become one. And how do you become a shero? How do you become a hero? And I think it's connected to this. Let me just tell this brief story. I keep saying we're going to get back to discussion, but I keep remembering stories I want to tell. I have a friend who's developed a kind of an understanding of theory. His name is Tom Cronin. He works at Colorado College. He's a thinker and a writer in the area of leadership that I really appreciate. Tom Cronin talks about leadership in three acts: Act 1, Act 2, and Act 3, like acts in a play. And he says, Act 1 leaders are those leaders on the national and international scene that if I said, think of a leader, those would be the people who'd come to mind for you, maybe. Gorbachev, more recently, Vaclav Havel, Margaret Thatcher, George Bush. Those would be people maybe on a national level who'd come to mind for you. Nelson Mandela. That's Act 1 leaders. Act 2 leaders are leaders on a regional or local scene who come to mind for us when we talk about leadership. It might be the mayor in your hometown, the governor in your state, the superintendent of schools in your neighborhood, the principal at a school you work at or your children's school. Those are typically Act 2 leaders. And again, they're namesakes. We can picture them as we think about leadership. College students and high school students are surprised at first when I tell them not to aspire to become either. Not to aspire to become Act 1 or Act 2 leaders, but to become Act 3 leaders. And this is what an Act 3 leader does. Act 3 leader is more defined by what they do than who they are. An Act 3 leader is someone who knows what their values are and choose to live out of them on a daily basis. Act 3 leaders are people who know what their values are and choose to live out of them on a daily basis. Now, sometimes the stream of history, which meanders like this, sometimes the stream of history thrusts them into the limelight and they become Act 1 or Act 2 leaders. If they choose to pursue Act 1 or Act 2 leadership, my fear is that they'll co-opt their values in the process. Let me cite three Act 3 leaders that I think have significantly changed the course of history. And I think you might know these people, or at least some of them. Name the Act 3 leader who simply lived out of her values and chose just to keep her seat and launch the civil rights movement. Rosa Parks. I had the distinct privilege of meeting Rosa Parks back in April. We had a leadership convention in our school for our students, and students chose to bring her in as the keynote speaker. Just a powerful woman who's transformed the whole student culture at Seattle University. Act 3 leader, Rosa Parks, just decided to live under her values. She had as much right to that seat as someone else. An Act 1 leader came in the scene and created the civil rights movement out of her courage. Name the person responsible in the 1970s for the resignation of a president. Ultimately responsible, if you trace that act back to its beginning.
Nixon.
Okay, Nixon was the person who resigned, but who's ultimately
responsible?
What's that?
Responsible.
Okay. Very good point, Bob. Who was responsible for helping us discover what President Nixon had done? Bernstein and Woodward. Actually, they came on the scene after this person. Deep Throat came on about the same time as Woodward and Bernstein. Bingo. The custodian at the Watergate Hotel who simply did his job and reported to his supervisor that there was tape on the door of the Democratic headquarters and that someone ought to investigate. That act of simple responsibility resulted in the resignation of a president. Act 3 leader. Final Act 3 leader is someone who I really admire. I'll just tell you who this is because we're running out of time. Vaclav Havel was disenchanted with the way things were in his country, began to write poetry and plays to help people to see a different vision. His plays and poems were banished, and so was he. But when a new era came, right, the course of history changed, meandered to a new vista, all of a sudden the person who was a stranger in his own land becomes president. None of them aspired to be Act 3 leaders. They all became Act 3 leaders because they lived out of their values on a daily basis. I think I've gone over my time. If you have any questions, I'll hang around for a few minutes. Thank you. Have a good rest of the day. I would be remiss if I didn't suggest, if you would like to do more reading about claiming your values and voice, I would highly recommend this book by Carol Gilligan, especially to any women in the room. If you've not read this, I would encourage you very strongly to purchase it. I think you'll find it a very revealing and empowering book to read. In a Different Voice by Carol Gilligan. I understand there's about 10 or 12 copies at the bookstore. Another book, sounds ominous in title, but it's very important. The Structure of Scientific Revolutions by Thomas Kuhn. A scientist kind of turned philosopher who helps us look at the underlying assumptions behind our culture, believing that leaders need to change those in order to change things for the common good. There's only about 5 copies. I would recommend this as a basic reading piece for anybody who wants to be an active citizen in the next 20 years.